Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Debate physics also, but the debate is thin because there's nobody willing to participate in something called a debate. Where one person makes an argument and the other person makes a counter-argument and that kind of thing. They don't want to do that. Okay, they just want to say the same things over and over. God is God. Blah, blah, blah. Alright, so, this could be in a better position, I think. It's so dangerous trying to move this camera. Anyway, so I did think of an idea. I'll get to a comment on relativity, but first we'll do a little pendulum kinetic energy thing. So, look, I've already shown a pendulum, shown already what it does. I mean, it oscillates on one side, you know, where you put the one mass, twice as much as it oscillates with the two mass, okay, so, and so it's just a fact that, you know, their kinetic energy theory says there's twice as much energy here, and momentum clearly just argues that, no, it's equal because it's half as much mass moving twice the speed, those two things equal each other, blah, blah, blah. So it's so logical that momentum wins. It answers the questions always correctly, and you just don't need 1/2 mv squared, and worse, it just breaks something that already works. Momentum works, doesn't fail, no need to break it. Anyway, so if I was thinking the fact that you can't make a Newton's cradle, right? I mean, a Newton's cradle has to be the same masses. You put a different mass in, and the energy can't 100% be transferred. You can only 100% transfer energy between like objects. So it has to be, you know, $5 bill, $5 bill, same mass. The currency has to be in the same denomination. And if something can only take $1 bills, well, you got a conversion problem. And so you can't do a nice little, you know, Newton's cradle swing back and forth thing with uneven masses. And that would be kind of telling if you could, because that would kind of demonstrate too that there's no, you know, if you could force the energy to go this way and then force the energy to come back this way, there's no way you could rationalize some kind of way that somehow it's doing kinetic energy. It would be just so clear that the 100% of the energy goes this way and then 100% of the energy goes that way. So the way around that would be a lever. So you could have the heavy thing, okay, the two mass, and the one mass, and you have it swing into the lever at the right position on the lever, and then have the one mass, you know, twice as far, and, you know, you could basically, they'd both end up going in the same direction, would be the downside, and you'd see this go four times the total height, okay, because it's going to have twice the velocity, and it's going to be in gravity. So you'd be able to visualize the four thing in gravity, where the lever, you can't, lever alone, you won't see that. You'll just see twice because the lever's doing the conversion. The gravity is 4x because the mass is half and the velocity is double. So obviously it gets affected by gravity at half the rate in two ways. First, the mass is twice as able to catch the gravity. And second, it's moving twice as fast. So that's why there's a four. Anyway, so the trick is then is you could put another lever. So unfortunately, I put this here. Okay, and you don't have to have it. You can hit it at the same location, the same distance, because you already did the distance thing here. So you've already done the conversion. And then this lever will push this one this way, and then you could have the other one hang this way. And so that way, the strings won't hit each other. See, the problem is if you have them both go the same way, the strings could hit each other. So then you'd have to have the lever have, you'd have to have separation between the two sideways, and then it's going to hit the lever unevenly. And so that creates some problems that are harder, I think, to engineer a way out. Creating a second fulcrum, that's a real downside because that's an energy killer. If somebody engineers this well, it should work fine. So the idea would be you should put a second lever just to do a straight conversion. And then your one mass object will, you know, do its 4x thing, and the heavy object will do its just its one thing, and you'll see the great difference. Little tiny swing in this pendulum, big swing in this pendulum. and it should oscillate for a while. All right, so anyway, it's another way to show it. Now, I'm saying technically, if I have to do that, I mean, if you have to reduce this to, you know, where you can't do any mechanical imagining at all, what's the point talking physics with idiots that can't even do any rational engineering in their own head? And the fact is the regular lever already proves it. I mean, I already showed it. You should be able to extrapolate from that, yes, I understand, all the energy's on one side of the lever, then all the energy's on the other side of the lever, okay? Gravity's providing the energy storage, and you're just switching which side of the lever the energy is on, and clearly twice the energy can't create half the energy, and half the energy certainly can't create twice the energy. So their energy must be equal. I mean, it's just too obvious. All right, so anyway, so it's a, it's a little bit of a challenge to engineer this just right, make the device, but we'll see. Maybe I'll get around to it, and maybe I won't. Like I said, it should be done well if it's going to be done, and, I'm busy. Anyway, a lot of things. Anyway, so I'll get to the comment and such. The relativity comment. Alright, should be back. Alright, so this is a comment on what video? Oh, okay. It was, the kid who... Well, whatever. Yeah. Anyway. So it seems the nature of the disagreement here is with K.A.'s view that relativity of simultaneity implies that there exists no preferred reference frame. No, that there's no real reference frame. That there's no real universe. That somehow everything can be an abstraction, and that there is no absolute frame of what would be called the universe that anything is happening in. You're breaking three dimensionality. You're breaking everything. I mean, it's you've turned everything into some sort of synthetic where you're imagining a universe where everything's happening in the same place when it's clearly not. I mean, it's so mush. I don't know how you conceive of it at all. All right. Thus, there is no global now, which, there's no universal now. The argument is that you're claiming that there can be something like a photon a billion light years away, and somehow it's moving at a different rate than the photons here, or that some other thing is happening in that universe or in that part of the universe. And it's not. The photons are moving at the same rate that they're moving here. Mechanical cause and effect is happening in the same exact way. Time is real. It's a function. It's not a dimension. It's a thing that happens because of the fact that there is no instantaneous movement. You can't get from one place to another except at that fastest speed, and that fastest speed is pretty slow. Thus, externalism, I mean, all these words, this jargon, it's just, humans are so disappointing, is true, a.k.a. past and future exist. So, again, they will exist. They have existed, but they don't exist at the same time. And the universe is a four-dimensional, so right there you're breaking vocabulary. I mean, there's only three dimensions by definition. A dimension has certain properties. The property is the right angle thing. All the dimensions have right angles to each other. So if you said there was six subdimensions, left, right, up, down, forward, back, it's always right angles. There's no dimension, there's no subdimension that isn't a right angle to all the other subdimensions. That's a dimension. You can't have a dimension if you're going to break that rule. You don't call it a dimension because, frankly, it's the rule of dimensionality. All the dimensions can be understood. They can be seen from other dimensions. As soon as you add a fourth dimension, you can't see anything. I mean, it's stupid. All right, essentially, whatever I am. I believe this. Why? Because they told you so? I mean, you know, there's so little evidence. There's no, you can't visualize it at all. So you believe in bent space. Well, what do you think it looks like, this bent space? What do you think an electron is seeing, this bent space thing? Somehow space is something else over there, and it's something else over there. It sees the difference in the space and knows it has to go that way. You really think that's reasonable? Anyway. And his views seem correct. Consistent with the religion. Yes, okay. So you're all religious kooks, is all I can say. You're just making up a fable about some kind of holy ghost and what he does and what his properties are, blah, blah, blah. But you're never going to produce any evidence that's real. I do not fully understand your grounds for dismissing it. First, it's unimaginable mush. And second, you don't have any evidence. And third, anything you say was evidence, I can counter-argue pretty well as pointing out bullshit. Okay. Are you denying the special relativity is accurate? I'm denying that, yes, it is. Of course I'm denying it. It doesn't produce anything. All of Einstein's complex math, the only math that did anything was the math that predicted or produced, he was given the assignment. Okay, Eddington said to Einstein, okay, I like your theory, but you need a piece of proof. So why don't you explain to me how it explains the precession of Mercury, because that's one that we can't figure out. Now, I would argue they couldn't figure it out because they were pretty stupid, because frankly, it seems pretty obvious what the cause is the center of the sun's center of gravity is not in one place. Okay, the sun is a big blob of moving crap, and it is affected by all the other things moving in the universe like we are. And the fact is that its center of gravity is precessing. It's moving. All right, it's mobile. And the fact is that precession could explain why Mercury is affected. Because Mercury is so much closer to the sun than all the other planets. So that little bit of precession in the sun's center of mass, Mercury would feel it, nothing else would, and that would explain it. But anyway, that's a rational explanation. You don't want rational explanations. So, but the math is so contrived and so complex, nobody even does it. They do an abstraction of it. They never actually calculate anything. Okay. Or is it his interpretation of it you have problems with? I have problems with any version of Christianity, okay? I don't care whether it's, Bible Belters or Catholic or whatever. They're all wacky and silly. You say, if I understand you correctly, that the impression of observing simultaneous moments, well, that's never taken place, in the sense that you've never shown any ability to break the fact that two things are simultaneous, and you can't change the fact that they're simultaneous by moving towards one or moving towards the other. What you do has absolutely nothing to do with the event. Not being so is merely an illusion brought about by light propagating to different regions at different times. Well, it's quite obviously the explanation. Different places see something at different times. Has absolutely nothing to do with what actually happened. It's just so obviously stupid for somebody to think because they're closer to one explosion and they hear it sooner than they hear the other explosion, that somehow the explosions were actually simultaneous. Or weren't. I mean, not understanding that simple truth, I mean, that's just too obvious. Could you point to somewhere where you explain this in greater detail? No. I mean, I've done videos on these subjects, but the detail is always just going to be the argument. I mean, how much time do you wish me to invest in debunking a religion? Because that's all you have. So, I mean, debunking something that has no evidence is tedious, frankly. Or perhaps, you know, I mean, it's like debunking religion. I mean, okay, you say there was a Jesus. Well, you say he was immaculately conceived. Well, why should I believe that crap? All right. Or perhaps do it here if you haven't done so. Yes, I'll write you 3 sentences of a complete explanation. Ugh, these people. So you don't think you're asking for much? Oh, okay. All right, so let's just go through the pieces that we do know. What can be argued of their argument? And their argument is so thin and so weak that there's just so little to argue, but I'll make some of the arguments. And we'll see where we go from there. All right, so the first thing that worked for Einstein, all right, was, wrote a short paper, right? It's like 2 pages or something. So it's not like it's a well-tested model of reality, the whole idea of relativity. And the time component was one of the key elements. So he's arguing, for his theory to work, he has to break the continuity of the universe in some sense, in that sense that all matter reacts to gravity very consistently. Okay, and the deal is, though, is that there's one special thing. Now, even though there's absolutely no evidence that light can be bent, okay, that is that its path can be altered unless it hits something. So there's no evidence that you can just bend light by putting magnetism or any kind of force applied to it. You can't bend light with light. You can't bend light with gravity. You can't bend light with anything by any evidence. So the key was, that what Einstein was saying is that light is bent twice as much. Not even that it's bent, which there was no evidence for, but that it's bent twice as much as other material objects, okay, based on its contrived mass. I mean, a mass of, say, 1, like the smallest thing in the universe would have the mass of 1, technically. First off, for somebody to argue that a massless object could be bent is just silly. The very existence of a massless object makes no sense if again, the MV thing comes in. How can something have momentum if it has no mass? I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. All right, and so all you have to prove that this is true is the Eddington experiment. Now, the Eddington experiment, like I said, the guy wrote in his own journal, "I wouldn't stake my life on these results." He concedes he got 10% of the data quality. So he was expecting 10,000 stars. He got 1,000. 10% data quality. So really, rarely, really doubtable experiment. Einstein got New York Times headlines, "Einstein proven right," blah, 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 blah. Never repeated the Eddington experiment with the same quality or better instrumentation. There is 400% better visibility from space. 400%. So imagine the 10% degrade in his results versus from space, 400% improvement in results. 400, not 4, 400% better viewing. And you don't need an eclipse. And it's never been done. So we're supposed to believe in space they can do it in 10 minutes. They've never done the experiment. In all the years we've been in space with cameras, they could do it with a GoPro. This guy needed a 12-foot, 12-inch telescope, okay? I mean, he needed a really big, heavy, monstrous telescope to do the experiment because of the limitations of seeing it through the atmosphere. 400% better. Never done. Now, I think that's pretty strong evidence that this is doubtable, okay? It's doubtable that light is bent at all by gravity. So then all the other experiments they've done where they get effects, okay, that indicate light being bent are experiments where light is actually going through the corona of suns, not just out here. So they send radio waves past the sun and they end up getting some that go to them. And they say, oh, those radio waves were bent. See, the radio waves going this way, they come this way and hit us. Well, the fact is, it's because they're going through the corona of the suns. The fact is the radio waves are going everywhere. They're scattering everywhere. So I could go anywhere and say, the light was bent to me. So no matter where I go, I'm going to get some of the light because it's scattering, okay, through the coronas of the suns. So that's a simple explanation that defeats all the other experiments. They can't prove that it's not scatter because they're not doing the experiment outside the corona of the objects they're saying are doing the lensing. They're not doing the experiment outside the dirty part, and the dirty part could be creating all of the effect. Now, the lensing that they see from the galactic lensing, you know, from far away objects, and they get some kind of little smiley face or something, and they say, oh, look, that's lensing. It's mathematically retarded. Okay, the shapes are wrong. Gravity that would be strong enough to bend light would be very consistent gravity, like black hole gravity. It wouldn't have no hair, as they say. There wouldn't be any hair on it. It wouldn't be bent gravity, okay? It wouldn't be crooked. It would be precise and very accurate. Mathematically, really, really sharp. So you couldn't have an arc this size and an arc that size and an arc over here this size. All that's crap. It's mathematical gibberish. Can't happen. Okay, Einstein pointed out that the Einstein ring would be so thin you would never, ever, ever see one because it could only be a few photons of light. I mean, it's a tiny area where the gravity would be just right. Gravity isn't a lens like this, okay? Gravity's a lens like this or something. I mean, it's a silly lens, all right? It doesn't magnify. It doesn't create a true image. So you can't just say that, you know, because it's doing the inverse thing. It's doing more bending as you go in and less bending on the outside. It's exactly the inverse of a magnifying lens. There's just a tiny place where you could say, okay, this is the right amount of bending to get to Earth. And right here, wrong bending. Right here, wrong bending. So an Einstein ring would be so thin you'd never see one. Yet they say they have pictures of them. That kind. Einstein said you wouldn't see it, and they don't care that Einstein himself said you wouldn't see it. They don't care, okay? Just like he said the gravitational waves are way too weak, you'd never be able to detect them. They don't care. So they accept Einstein's theory, but they turn into a completely different religion. Just as you could argue the Catholics aren't very Jesus-like. Okay, they really don't care about what Jesus said. All right, so I'll probably erase this and we'll continue to the next subject of their evidence. All right, a couple more relativity arguments. So one of the theory points is that, there's no way you can do no experiment that would tell you your movement. So you can be in some sort of bubble in your little frame, and there's supposed to be no experiment you can do that'll tell you how fast you're going, whether you have the velocity or whether something out here has the velocity. There's no way to tell. Now, obviously, I'd say if you had a window, you could tell, okay, but whatever. Let's just play along. I point out the light clock would tell you, okay, because the light clock will, in fact, bend. So if you're shooting light this way and you're moving this object at relativistic speeds very fast, anywhere near even half the speed of light, what you'll see is that the light will end up hitting, okay, not perpendicular to where it left. Okay, because the matter is escaping, okay, this target is moving, and it won't be at the same position that the emitter was at when the light was shot. Otherwise, light was shot with this at, you know, this position, it's going to be received at this position. That differential will definitely cause the light to appear to bend, so that a light clock would, in fact, tell you how fast you're going. It'd be a perfect speedometer, theoretically. Now, I would argue that because you're moving these atoms so fast, okay, that the target isn't going to see the light anyway. It's going to be able to react to it. It's not going to be able to create the electrical potential that we see light using, and that we won't be able to detect the light anyway, because it won't be capable of creating the same phenomenon. So I would argue you'll never see an actual atom moved anywhere near the speed of light, okay, because the actual atom will fall apart if you attempt to move it that fast. And the only thing that survives in space going relativistic speeds or something very fast, are the cosmic rays, and they're basically nuclei. Okay, so they've lost their reality as an element, and they're a piece of an atom at best. Now, I'd argue they're probably just neutrons, but whatever. I don't want to argue it. The fact is that, okay, it's you can make this argument, but, you know, it doesn't really work. And then another test you could do is just bang into each other. So the absolute fact is that if I take a big object and I bang it into a small object, I'll end up creating a circumstance where both objects are going in the same direction. But if I bang a small object into a big object, so if the energy is in the small object, I'll end up with the big object going this way and the small object going that way. So the fact is the two circumstances won't be the same. So if you allow collisions, you'll find out the truth. So, you know, there's nothing, it's just a gimmick. You're playing a game with the fact that, yes, okay, the relative physics does work in the sense that physics doesn't care too much. If I move this piece in front of you, it doesn't molecularly change. It doesn't break into a million pieces, nothing. So there's no way to really tell whether the whole Earth did this or whether this moved. But that's a gimmick. It's just our ability not to be able to be in absolute space and make absolute judgments and absolute views. But the fact is that, yeah, it's not some law or rule, and you've certainly not proven it with anything called evidence. So, you know, just talk. It's just a story, and it fits a little because of the fact that our vision is limited. It's just like the Heisenberg principle. You know, that something doesn't have a place because we can't see it. Well, yeah, the fact is we can't see it. We can't sit there and just measure its place and its position without changing its position. We can't hit it with anything small enough not to disturb it. So you're going to use that gimmick, that catch, okay, to say, I'm going to make up a whole bunch of stories about how it's an invisible man and it does this and it does that and all this stuff because I can't see it. I mean, you know, whatever. It's your prerogative. I'm saying, I don't think it's logical. I think you can reason your way around it, that there's no way the photon goes straight across the spaceship if you're moving very, very fast in a direction. See, the catch is we just can't do it, right? Because it's 30,000 miles an hour. It's not enough room. We need a bigger spaceship. You know, we need a very, very large spaceship to be able to see how much the light got bent. And so that's the catch. But the fact is the light clock is a speedometer. It tells you exactly how fast you're going. The more you bend the light, so to speak, the more this light goes straight and the wall is moving, okay, the more you'll see it at the wrong place on the wall. All right. I think that's enough of that. And so we'll do one more thing. All right, so now for the worst of all the arguments, the silly GPS. GPS proves it. GPS proves... No, it doesn't prove it. So the idea that somehow GPS proves time is altered. That somehow it doesn't prove that clocks are breakable. No, it proves that there's time dimensions. All right, and the simple argument is the GPS is based on the most reliable clock we can find for basic circumstances, which would be something radioactive, isotopes, decaying. And but the catch, and there's always a catch, okay, is that you can alter the decay rate of radioactive objects, okay? I mean, they decay at a rate, okay, in the sense that each one is an individual atom and it's going to fall apart and split into two atoms. And it's going to shoot out some crap as leftovers. And this event, okay, happens to each atom individually, but it's not... it can be understood that it is it's a probability event. It's an event that takes place because of a environmental circumstance. Because I can change the environment that the isotope is in, or the bit that I'm measuring the rate at which they decay, and I can change the rate at which they decay. Okay, nuclear power plants do this every day by just consolidating them, putting more of them in the same space, closer together. So if they're closer together, they decay more rapidly. If the atoms are further apart, they decay less rapidly. So it's always, you know, they teach it as if the decay rate is set. Every one of them is 10,000 years. Every atom, it waits 10,000 years and then it decays. That's not what happens, okay? It's just the fact that there's a very improbable event. Now, so I've made the simple argument that the improbable event could be that a piece of energy force hits at exactly the same time on both sides and goes to the nucleus and causes the effect of decay. So you could understand that if I moved an atom in a direction, that I would make this less probable because I'm going to have more energy coming in this way than this way. So I'm going to reduce the probability of getting hit from this direction because I'm moving in the same direction as the force. So therefore, I'm escaping one half of the portion of the probability. You need both halves to have the event, and I'm making one half less probable. I'm making the other half more probable, but the other half is less probable. Okay, and the fact that it's less probable means that you're going to reduce the number of permutations of its possibility, blah, blah, blah. Now, if the event has to come from this side, you can see it's even less probable because both sides are less probable. But anyway, or if I added spin, you can do different things to understand that all I have to do is create some circumstance where, obviously, if I'm moving atoms, okay, the atoms that are radioactive at high velocities, that I make them less radioactive. And that's all the clock has to do to explain why the clocks break when we give them velocity. Now, the other aspect to this is understanding the difference between the general relativity and the special relativity, right? So one of them just has to do with velocity, how fast are you going, and the other one has to do with how much gravity you're in. All right. So my simple argument is you can understand why, see, unlike what people think, the satellites are actually slower. The clocks aren't going faster, the clocks are going slower, right? Now the clocks are going faster, ours are going slower. So we're the ones being dilated here on Earth. And that's because you can understand that gravity is related to velocity. And you can understand that a satellite up here and somebody on the Earth in heavy gravity, now this could have a velocity that's much higher than this thing on Earth, you know, 30 times the velocity. This is going 1,000 miles an hour, say, on rotation, and this is going 30,000. But the difference is that this is in the heavier gravity, and what's happening in gravity is that you're being pushed down and then you're being pushed back up. So your atoms are actually all the time moving and jiggling in the gravity. And so it's basically in a least line. And you can understand that compared to a straight line, okay, this is a much higher velocity. You're traveling much more distance if you're going up and down. The basketball is going at a much higher velocity than the basketball player. So the fact is when you're in heavy gravity, your leasing is very strong. When you're in weak gravity, your leasing is very weak, so it's less distance. So the added real distance, the real velocity of your atoms, which are doing two motions, they're jiggling and they're being moved in a direction. So the real velocity, okay, for the thing on Earth is much higher because it's in the stronger gravity and it's doing a much larger leasing. This, okay, is much more distance than this in the same time, which means it's much more velocity. So we're really going very fast. Our atoms are in motion. They have a lot of motion, a lot of distance being covered in the same amount of time. And that's why our radioactive elements are decaying slower than the ones out there in space. All right. So that's a simple explanation, I mean, a mechanical explanation. Maybe it's not 100% correct. Maybe there's some other mechanical mechanism. But I think this is logical enough in understanding that, yes, you're not standing still in gravity. You can feel it right now, right? I can feel I'm being pushed by the Earth. I know I'm being pushed by gravity, so I don't feel that one at all. All I feel is the Earth pushing back. So I know it's... Yes, this is happening, and then this one happens. And the reason why I don't feel gravity is because gravity is happening in this little tiny, you know, this radiation is hitting me. So, you know, the force isn't felt because every little atom is getting hit by the radiation evenly, and so there's no uneven distribution of the force. The force is hitting all the atoms, getting it, pushing everything. It's pushing my nerves, my sense organs, the same way it's pushing all the other atoms, and so I can't feel the difference. But when the Earth pushes back, it pushes back very unevenly. The ones, the little atoms on my ass are the ones getting all the energy. It's not distributing it throughout my whole body. So I can feel the difference between the surface cells and the nerve cells. They can feel the difference because there's a lot more pressure here than there is on them. And they sense the differential. So I feel getting pushed back up, but I don't feel getting pushed down. And theoretically, again, it's not like every atom at any moment is, theoretically, every atom at every moment is either going up or it's going down. They're not all doing it at the same time. But the fact is they're all jiggling in the space. And so if I move something jiggling, something's jiggling, okay, and I move it, it means I'm amplifying, okay? You can see the jiggles then. You can see how much distance I'm actually traveling, real distance. So there's no time dimension that's broken or changed or altered. All you can do is break clocks, and that's it. But you're never going to change whatever, there's an event happening here in the universe and an event happening here in the universe, and the fact is they're tied to each other. The universe, billions of light years away, it's the same time there that it is here, okay? And there's going to be causes and effects, and things are going to move, and they're doing it now, there. The pictures we're going to see are old because they're taking forever to get here. So we see it. What we see doesn't have anything to do with what's happening over there now. But there is a now over there, and there was a then over there, just like there was a then here. All right, time is just an arrow, okay, and that's it. It's not a dimension. It's a function in the universe, because nothing happens instantaneously. There's no instantaneous events in the universe. The force, light, takes time to get from A to B. That's why there's time, because there's nothing that gets from A to B instantaneously. Nothing does it. So the fastest thing in the universe takes time to do it, therefore everything else takes time. And we can understand that we're just an insanely, trillions and trillions of events are happening inside of us at this speed of light scale. So we're just, we're so disconnected from that really fast A to B time because we're traveling A to B's that are made out of a trillion A to B's. We can't see the A and the B we're looking at is a trillion times slower than the A to B of the atomic universe. It's not, trillion isn't even the right word. Trillion, trillion, I don't know. Anyway, trillions. So believe what you, like I said, I can only reason with you people. Obviously you're not very reasonable. I made so many arguments pointing out so many flaws. And you just cling and cling and cling, and I can't stop you. I think you're being unreasonable to believe so many things based on so little physical evidence. And they're just telling you a story. And it's not even a good story. Bent space? It's not even what do you mean bent nothing? I'm going to bend the nothing and the electrons will see that nothing's bent? So clearly you're believing in ethers again or something. I don't know. It has to be a something that's bent. Can't be a nothing bent. And it just breaks the whole continuity of understanding the conservation of energy. I mean, Descartes, a religious kook, 350 years ago, 400, gave you a pretty good point, made a pretty good point that the energy just travels through the universe. It just keeps on moving. You just follow where it goes. The energy's put into the universe. It's in the universe, and you're just following. It never stops. That explanation is brilliant. And here you are, bent space. I'll make up some new source of energy. It's just pointless. And you only get away with it because it's conservative, in the sense that it takes just as much energy to fall into something as it does to pull out of it. But it's stupid to think there's not a mechanical cause for the event. The speed of gravity, the speed of light, the speed of magnetism, the speed of electricity in a perfect conductor, they're all the same speeds. They have to be the same thing. The same stuff. Whatever. It's just so discouraging that people are so... I don't know why. I just don't get it. I don't get why you're so aggressive in accepting such silly stories. I just don't understand why people gravitate to religious babble and all of this scientific woo answers. I don't get it. Because I was never crippled by any affection for fables. Just tell me a story. Just say everything's going to be all right. That never worked. Why tell me a lie? What use is that? Well, whatever. Alright, so anyway, this has been, another DraftPhysics.com, DebatePhysics.com also, a video presentation. Thanks for your attention, but apparently you're impervious to reason, so paying attention doesn't mean much. Unfortunately. No point in listening if you're not really going to listen.